I'm Brandi Cruz. Today on Undivided, voting is your superpower. That's the message from our friend Andrea Suarez with We Heart Seattle. She'll join us. So what kind of qualities should Seattleites be considering when they decide who to vote for on November 7th?
Compassionate leaders who care about saving lives.
And a local school stands behind a trans runner, now at the center of national attention. Plus, Seattle police start enforcing a new drug possession law. Will it help?
What was profound today was the community support our officers felt.
That and more today on Undivided. You can support the show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Happy Tuesday. I'm totally lost with my days. I'll also note, it is Bring Your Dogs to Work Day. I don't do it often. Had to do it today because I'm going to be up at the Historic Everett Theater later tonight for another edition of the KTTH Freedom Series. So I couldn't leave the pups at home all day. So I'm sure we'll have some four-legged interruptions. So just be advised of that. I want to start by following up on a couple stories that not only do we talk about on the show yesterday, but one of them in particular just blew up on social media after we discussed it. And that was the handout that we went through yesterday that was given to some students at Blaine in the Blaine School District. And it was a power privilege checklist where you had to rank your, find a power privilege score based on weird characteristics like the color of your skin, the sexual orientation of your parents, your level of sanity, whether you're physically attractive, just very strange stuff. We posted that on social media and it just went wild, really. And so I know that there's some Blaine like Facebook groups, Nicole, you're in touch in the Blaine community that are trying to figure out who leaked it to us.
Yes.
You know, and trying to get to the bottom of it.
It's kind of shocking to me how many people are actually, I mean, my friends aren't scared to be associated with me, but there were some people that were like, oh, I hope it doesn't come back to me because they know I was with her last weekend. And I was like, wait, why are you worried about that? Because it created a discussion. That's what we want out of it. Sometimes it brings out the people that get riled up and kind of go to their corners and don't listen. But in reality, you want a discussion and then you want to point out why it's not the best method for teaching children how to interact, right?
And this is for anything.
Right. Well, this should be a discussion you have in your home and that you discuss with your children how you deal with it as a parent in the same, because it's mostly based on characteristics. So I think that it's like parents that have the same characteristics as their children. And I just think it was a good discussion. And I'm disappointed because the principal or the superintendent has not responded to me.
Right. And that's our follow-up today.
Yeah.
We did reach out and we had a simple question, which is, what is the point of this exercise? That's really what we want to get to the bottom of. And that is part of the conversation. Why do you feel the need for kids to get some sort of score based on their level of privilege? And what do you hope that they learn from that? And who gets to decide what is true privilege and not? I mean, you know, basing it off of, first of all, things you cannot change about yourself. So we wanted to follow up and let you know that we've reached out to the Blaine School District with legitimate questions. What did you hope kids got out of this? And we haven't heard back from them. And that's disappointing. Because if you're giving this to kids, you ought to be able to stand behind it, right?
Absolutely.
If you think what you're doing is right and giving this to kids, if you have a purpose, if there's a reason you're doing it, you should be able to stand behind it. And you should be able to relay to us why you're doing it. They haven't so far. We will follow up with them today, and we hope that changes. So, Nicole on the Blaine beat, we appreciate it. a second, and no one should be ashamed to associate themselves with Nicole.
I know.
She's a great person. And we've already said that people with common sense need to speak out about these things, so don't be afraid to speak out. It's fine. A second story we wanted to follow up on, and we actually did get a response and a comment on this. We mentioned yesterday Riley Gaines, a former collegiate swimmer who has become outspoken about biological men participating against women in athletics. She talked about a transgender runner, biological boy, who identifies as a girl running against and competing against girls in track. And they are a student at Seattle Academy. And there was some anger from other schools that, you know, parents were claiming and have claimed that they've been told you cannot speak out about this. You can't wear, you know, shirts with political slogans or political signs specific to this
issue, or it could, you know, jeopardize your students' chance of participating at state. So anyway, Riley Gaines really thrust this situation, this particular runner and the school, Seattle Academy, into the national spotlight. And we did get a response from Seattle Academy. So I want to share that from you. It's from Madeline Pennington, the Director of Marketing and Communications. She said, Seattle Academy does not have a rule that prohibits parents and students from voicing opposition to the Washington Interscholastic Activities Association policy, which is in compliance with state and federal guidelines. There was also no communication regarding commentary, behavior, or actions that would prohibit participation or competition at the state level. All athletes must behave and compete in accordance with rules and regulations. So that was in response to our questions about, have parents or student athletes been told explicitly you are not to push back against this? Seattle Academy at least says that's not the case for them. We don't know if there are other schools that have that sort of policy in place where it is upsetting to them. I mean, I can understand why parents at Seattle Academy might not care because it's helping them win. But I am interested in also reaching out to other schools to say, hey, you had student athletes that participated in this. Here's what parents are saying. More on that in a second, but let me continue with the statement. They went on to say, in fact, Seattle Academy encourages open dialogue as part of our mission to foster a dynamic community. They went on to say, though, that in terms of the anger or outrage some have at a biological boy competing against biological girls, they said that it's not just them passively following a policy from the Interscholastic Activities Association. They vehemently agree with the policy. They said SAAS unequivocally supports our students and families and the WIAA policies that protect the rights and opportunities of transgender student athletes. They went on to say, our support is a matter of principle and choice, not the result of adherence to prescribed rules or external values. And so they're saying we are 100% on board with biological boys competing in athletics against biological girls. And I do think that that's an important distinction. These are WIAA rules and regulations that allow for this. And so you are certainly going to have schools like Seattle Academy that say, we love that. We think that's appropriate. We want trans athletes, boys, to be able to participate and beat girls. And then you're going to have some other schools that have no choice but to adhere to those guidelines. And that those are two very different things. So Seattle Academy, I'll give them credit for responding to us and being very firm in their position. Like, hey, this is not just something we're doing, you know, because we have to. This is a choice that we're making. I will say, and I want to end with this, we want to hear from parents whose student athletes participated at the track meet in question. If you're interested in speaking to us, be it off the record or on the record, about this policy and what's happening, you can reach out to us. Go to undividedpod.com. undividedpod.com. There is a contact form there. It goes directly to Nicole and I. There is no filter that goes through. We want to hear from you. So please do reach out to us because especially on the point of Seattle Academy saying we have no rules or policies against speaking out. If you're a parent and that's not true, we want to hear from you. Okay. On the topic of schools being an absolute disaster, now they're also, you know, very dangerous. And we had talked about on the show, hi, Mackenzie, how are you? Good to see you. My dog just, she breathes heavy. She's old. She's just over here breathing heavy. If you can hear that, that's not Nicole moaning in the background. That's Mackenzie.
Thank you for clarifying.
Yeah,
that.
It's not Nicole. If you hear any farting, if you hear anything like that and bodily noises, it's the 14-year-old black lab, not Nicole, just for the record. So we, I think it was last week or the week before, we talked about this viral Fox News clip with Fox News sent in a correspondent for the Jesse Waters show, and they interviewed Seattleites and they played clips. And I don't know if it was selectively edited, but they played clips from Seattleites who are like, what crime crisis, including the now infamous lady in the green coat?
It's not a thing that happens just on the street. People don't just come up and try to rob people on the street. Do you walk around every day? Like, someone's going to rob me every second?
That doesn't happen here. Of course it happens here. We've given numerous examples. And now, unfortunately, it's happening to students who are leaving a Seattle high school. This freaks me right the heck out. I mean, you know, you've already got parents who are like, schools, are they a safe place for my kids and that whole thing. Well, now you got to be worried about, you can't even walk to and from school. The article
getting mugged.
Getting mugged. Seattle students targeted in string of armed robberies near Ballard schools. So it says students are being mugged at gunpoint in the neighborhoods near two school campuses in Ballard, according to Seattle police. They're warning families, obviously, to be on high alert. The armed robberies have been committed around both Ballard High School and Whitman Middle School. Students say it started about 6 weeks ago. They're being mugged at gunpoint for their cell phones, their wallets, other valuables. Some of the students have been physically assaulted. One student says that they've gotten jumped, and it's obviously terrifying. And Nicole, you pointed out a key detail in this story. The suspects, what are they driving to and from the scene?
Kias and Hyundais.
So obviously you have suspects using stolen vehicles to target kids who are trying to walk home from school in neighborhoods that aren't particularly crime ridden. Right. I mean, certainly they have issues in Ballard related to homelessness. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to like armed robberies, that's really not something that you see happen up there with any sort of frequency.
In the middle of the day. Kids walking home from school. Yeah,
targeting kids.
It does make me think, though, that we did a story last week about 30,000 cars stolen in the state this year so far. It's like 71 a day. Well, there are not 30,000 kids stealing cars.
No.
Those are the same kids stealing cars all the time. And now they've escalated. Now they're using those stolen cars to get away with bigger crimes. I mean, I think that that's been happening here and there all along. But it's escalating. And we're still choosing to not do anything about these stolen cars and not make it a priority to get that problem fixed.
And that was what Democrats who supported reining in the ability of police officers to pursue suspects. They didn't want them chasing stolen vehicles. That's what they said it's a property crime. And how oblivious to reality can you be? Why do you think people are stealing cars? This isn't like some kid's out for a joyride and they just want to go take it for a spin. No, they're using it in the commission of another crime, and it's a way for them not to be tracked. I mean, when we have all the stories about people in stolen vehicles ramming into convenience stores and hooking up to the ATM and pulling it out. I mean, and then you see the judges. Where we talked about the story in Thurston County, where you've got a car full of juveniles, except the one adult, and they're fleeing from law enforcement after they committed a hit and run. And then the judge is like, go ahead, go home to your parents. That's not going to help.
No.
So there's no consequences. And yes, it's a small group of people that are responsible for this. And, and common sense tells us that they are stealing vehicles to commit other crimes, in furtherance of other crimes. And so not allowing police to pursue stolen vehicles because it's a property crime. How dumb can that be? Sorry, that's not very undivided of me, but it's absolutely insanity. And then when police are able to have probable cause to pursue and then arrest somebody in a stolen vehicle, then they just get cut loose. And then we're wondering why we've got people using stolen vehicles to mug students, middle school and high school students at gunpoint.
Right.
What an environment this has created. It's truly insane to me. So, and can we just play the Fox News lady again? Because, I mean, honestly, I just don't know if there's a better clip that proves the absolute mindset of some Seattleites.
It's not a thing that happens just on the street. People don't just come up and try to rob people on the street. Do you walk around every day? Like, someone's going to rob me every second?
Yeah. Well, these students probably do now walk around every day thinking, is somebody going to rob me any second? Ridiculous. All right. We talked a lot about Seattle's new drug ordinance. So little history here. Back in June, there was an effort to pass a city ordinance that would allow Seattle police officers to make arrests for open-air drug use and possession. And this is after the state felony drug possession law was ruled unconstitutional. And so Seattle's like, well, let's prosecute this on a misdemeanor basis. That got killed by the Seattle City Council and the councilman for downtown, Andrew Lewis, and then a watered-down version a few weeks ago got passed. Now, I said at the time that I was worried it wouldn't be very effective because the watered-down version requires police officers to not only prove that someone's, you know, smoking or possessing drugs in public, but that they are also a danger to others. And I thought, well, how are you going to do that? Because if a Seattle officer walks up on someone for drug possession, but there's also probable cause that they're a danger to others, chances are you could have arrested them anyway, because whatever they're doing that is presenting a danger to other people would have been some sort of different crime besides drug possession. So it made no sense. But Seattle Police Chief Adrian Diaz, he is now updating the public on enforcement efforts of this new watered-down ordinance. And I have to say, I'm kind of happy with their first effort. Seattle police officers went out to two areas in particular where there's a high volume of open-air drug use. Here's the chief.
Officers began to connect with people, many people openly using drugs in these two areas of 12th and Jackson and 3rd and Pike. And here's what our officers encountered. We made 25 contacts. 15 of those contacts were referred and connected with a caseworker today. Two of those contacts declined services altogether. And 10 of those contacts had disqualifying reasons for not being referred. Some it's because due to violence, due to certain other conditions or certain arrests that was made today as part of that.
Yeah, and what he detailed is that, okay, you had some officers go up to people using drugs, gave them a choice, like, hey, either you, well, it's not really a choice. They basically, the only thing they could do under the law if the person wasn't a threat to other people is say, hey, do you want treatment? And some of them said yes, and some of them said no. And then officers just had to move along. So in that sense, the ordinance isn't effective at all because officers cannot simply arrest them for saying no to treatment, which I think is common sense. The ordinance should be that officers go out, hey, you're illegally using drugs, you're illegally possessing drugs, you have two choices, treatment or arrest. That should be what it is. That's common sense. Instead, they have no leverage against them unless that person is simultaneously posing a threat to other people. But here's the thing I didn't really think about in all of this that I actually think is a very good thing and is going to result in making the community more safe. So Chief Adrian Diaz talked about during the enforcement of this, there were individuals who were contacted and because of that contact were arrested for different things.
Officers booked 10 people into King County Jail for the following reasons. Two people had new charges. One had possession with intent to deliver. One had possession with intent to deliver and was in possession of a stolen firearm. One had a fugitive warrant out of California. There were 7 felony warrants for a variety of reasons, including rape, assault, domestic violence, a DOC escape warrant, and 1 misdemeanor warrant for assault. What's important to highlight is that we might not have had come and contacted had we not had this drug usage ordinance in effect.
There it is. And there's the thing that I hadn't really contemplated when we were discussing this watered down version, which is at least it gives officers the ability to essentially contact someone for the simple act of using drugs in public. And through that contact, you heard about some of the people who officers had interactions with. A guy who's got a warrant out for rape, a DOC escape. And this doesn't surprise me. I mean, you know, there's a segment of the left and uber progressives and socialist Democrats who want to act like, oh, these are down on their luck people who simply got addicted to drugs. No, like sometimes these are really bad people. And that contact is an opportunity to see if they have a warrant, an opportunity to see if they're committing another crime that's putting the public in grave danger. So that's really important. And it's a really important point that Chief Diaz made is this ordinance, as watered down as it is, it's actually going to be useful in getting dangerous people off the streets. You might not be able to arrest them for the drug possession or the drug use, but you sure as heck can arrest them on that outstanding felony warrant. The other thing of note, Chief Diaz said that they, while officers were out doing this at 3 and Pine, 12 and Jackson, the community was freaking thrilled.
What was profound today was the community support our officers felt. People came up to the officers thanking them. We continue to ensure that we are going to be compassionate in our approach to getting people connected with services, while still making sure our city's streets are safe for all of our residents.
Yeah, and it's also going to make a difference when people start to realize that officers now have this authority and the mayor's behind it and the chief of police is behind, are both behind it. And so you can, you know, maybe it'll put them on edge and make them feel less comfortable in committing these overt criminal acts that absolutely erode the quality of Seattle and the quality of life. So it's not a perfect ordinance. It should have been done back in June. It should have been passed in its original form. Andrew Lewis. However, it's something and it gives police officers a tool to be able to get dangerous people off the streets. So that's good. All right, coming up next, Andrea Suarez of We Heart Seattle is going to join us to talk about her new effort to get people to vote 2 weeks from today. I look forward to that. We talked a lot on the show about the state of the economy, about Bidenomics, how it's built on just a house of cards of trillions of dollars of printed money. Our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital has been telling us how that there's a lot of risk involved in that. And if you're just starting to plan for retirement and save for retirement, or if you're in retirement, that house of cards is going to come crashing down. And it's important to ask yourself and to really know, am I managing my risk appropriately?
We think the world is going insane. We think that the world is propped up on all kinds of, you know, it's, we don't think, we know, propped up printed money. And you're playing a game that has to end badly, right? Now, when it ends, when you hear all these prognosticators financially talking about when it ends, it kind of reminds me of when God's coming back. Nobody knows, right? But what it does mean is that you need a portfolio that can do two things. It can keep up with inflation and not get you buried. But also, when the inevitability of living and perpetuating an economy on printed money, when that inevitability comes to the fore, you need a portfolio that can stand up against anything, right?
Yeah, inevitability. So do not let that happen. Do not let that come without first managing your risk. Reach out to our friend Zach Abraham and the team at Bulwark Capital, knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. Talk through that with him. It doesn't matter if you're close to retirement or you're just getting started. Managing your risk, given the state of the economy right now, is critical. All right. Andrea Suarez is a dear friend of the show. She is the founder of We Heart Seattle, which is a citizen-led nonprofit that started with her getting sick of looking at the trash in city parks and going out to clean it up herself. Now her team and her volunteers has cleaned up like 1 million pounds of trash across the city of Seattle, cut through the government red tape and bureaucracy. And now We Heart Seattle is taking on another, I would say it's not a new movement, it's something in addition to what they're already doing, and that is encouraging residents to get out and vote. They've launched a campaign. It is called Voting is Your Superpower. You might see that plastered on billboards across the city of Seattle as we are now 2 weeks out from the election. So Andrea was kind enough to stop by the studio today to talk to us about this new mission. Andrea Suarez, welcome back to Undivided.
Thank you for having me.
So before we get to this whole situation, the reason that you're here, I get anxiety leading up to an election. Just, I guess that's just built in. But you've been so entrenched in some of the issues that Seattle is having. So do you have worry and concern about the direction things will go?
I do have a lot of worry. The Voting is Your Superpower campaign is just that, to turn out new voters, to engage voters, voter education, register new voters. And so we're doing all of that. And Saturday was our kickoff event, which was a walkabout through three districts working with King County Elections to host a voter registration booth and just passing out flyers, asking people where they're from. Are they voting? Did they get their ballot yet? To just really energize and create some buzz that voting is your superpower. And it's critical for this particular election with 7 out of the 9 seats up for grabs.
Yeah. To be clear, I mean, I know you have your personal opinions about candidates. Is that something We Heart Seattle is advocating for, like voting for or against people?
Well, if you go to our website, there is a voter candidate, you know, breakdown, direct links to their own websites. We cannot directly endorse any candidate, obviously, as a 501c3, but we are encouraging voters to educate themselves on, like, what are each candidate, you know, doing for our public safety crisis, our homelessness crisis, the environmental crisis, you know, impacted by these unsanctioned camps, you know, having picked up 1 million pounds of trash. You know, I am in the belly of this beast and I know what is working and what's not. And I don't think we should be rewarding people who've been in these seats with the state our city's in. So I'm just asking voters to educate themselves and get out the vote.
Yeah, one of the things I liked about this page on your website is you almost are talking about what qualities they should look for in an elected leader, as opposed to, you know, vote for this person or don't vote for this person. So what kind of qualities should Seattleites be considering when they decide who to vote for on November 7th?
Compassionate leaders who care about saving lives. Some of the recent ordinances that have been passed finally, you know, about arresting for open air use and possession of narcotics is one. Which candidate is for or against that moving forward? The unsanctioned encampments, the open air drug scenes. I mean, there's this huge mall, drug mall on 6th and Yesler, like right now. Why is that still here? You know, thousands of families and fans will walk right by it this weekend, the Seahawks game. So letting people languish and die in these encampments, you know, having found nine deceased bodies myself. Wow. I just have to ask these questions, like what's working and what's not, and what are each of those candidates standing for in terms of breaking up the open air drug scenes and restoring our police department, being down 700 officers since 2019, is having a ripple effect through all of our districts.
What do you think it's going to take? I mean, obviously you're working on it and trying to get out and talk to people, but what do you think it's going to take to get more of those registered voters who simply aren't voting in all the elections to care enough to turn that ballot in?
I mean, it's marketing, it's messaging, it's getting out there, boots on the ground, grassroots events, much like there's a lot of candidate fundraisers going on right now. We need to have those ballot rallies, get out the vote parties, pop-ups, use your superpower. You know, this is a call to your audience. You know, if you own a business, are part of a book club, your athletic department, you know, get those folks together and get them talking about voting. And it's a grassroots effort, I believe. And your vote counts. Every vote counts.
Yeah. How can they get involved in voting as your superpower? Is it just as much as voting and passing the message along?
Yeah, passing the message along. Use social media. I voted today. Show you a video putting your ballot in the ballot box. I have 1,000 of these t-shirts. If you look us up at info@weheartseattle.org, send me your address. We'll drop off a box for your soccer team, your book club, your business, handing them out for free. We have been donated these t-shirts, and we want to spread the message that way. And every vote matters. And yeah, the 30% at best turnout, the undivided are not voting. So we don't have a consensus. There's no majority. And we feel divided because we're not coming together to vote. And I believe that voting, if I'm running for a pageant, voting is your superpower. And voting will bridge the divide, and maybe we'll have peace, a feeling of peace.
Gosh, that sounds so nice. And extra points for anyone who fits in the name of the show while they're here doing interviews. So you nailed it. Let me ask you about one more topic, just because we talked about it on the show before you came on, is the city of Seattle has started to enforce in the Seattle Police Department this watered down drug possession ordinance. To me, I think my concern about it was you had to prove that someone was a danger to themselves or others before you could arrest them on the drug ordinance, which in practice, I was sort of like, how is that going to work? So the chief of police came out and said they've started to enforce it. Does it seem promising to you?
I think it is. Yeah, I've seen more police down on the blade, and it's about that allowable, no rules playground that's devolved our these human beings out there, and there's nothing humane about that. And so I'm really hopeful about the direction of this. It's humane, and we should see a reduction in overdose death. And that should be the forefront on everybody's mind, is the death toll and how do we reduce that now. No amount of levies and housing and policies short term, we might pass them, but we need immediate incremental solutions to save people's lives. And you know, it's unfortunate that we had to wait a few more weeks before that eventually passed, because that was death on people's watches.
Yeah, 100% agree. You guys are also our charity of the year. So if people want to donate to help the work that We Heart Seattle is doing, how can they do that?
WeHeartSeattle.org. We take donations of all kind, time, talent, treasure. We would love people to come back out and volunteer with us. Get your neighbors out voting, have ballot rally parties. Make sure we're talking about getting out the vote, and we do like donations. So come out in time, talent, or treasure.
Yeah, and hopefully we get you. You see that jar over there with the cash in it? That's my snort jar. So every time I snort on the show, I have to put a dollar in. And then at the end of the year, we'll ask viewers to match it for We Heart Seattle donations. So you should want me snorting on the show. So
thank you.
All right. Yes, Andrea Suarez, we appreciate all the work that you're doing for folks. Get out and vote. Get those ballots in and be informed about who you're voting for. So thanks for what you're doing.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
We love Andrea Suarez. I'd also note, I haven't snorted on the show in a while. So, I mean, maybe, Nicole, you just need to be funnier.
Yeah,
maybe laugh more.
Yeah, there we go.
But you should have your ballots in hand. I've got mine in the mail. It came over the weekend. And so I'm going to turn it in wearing my brand new Voting is Your Superpower shirt. And I'll post a video of that. And so it's important that, especially given some of the things on the ballot, I mean, there are school board races that are critical. Olympia, please. please do us a solid, get those incumbents off the school board. There are public safety positions like the sheriff's raise up in Snohomish County, and then in Seattle, you've got 7 of 9 council seats, so absolutely critical. If you're interested in learning more about or maybe getting a t-shirt about the voting years, your Super Hour campaign, visit WeHeartSeattle.org, WeHeartSeattle.org. You can also make a donation to Andrea Suarez and her team to help them continue the wonderful, wonderful work that they're doing. As I mentioned, We Heart Seattle is our subscriber-selected charity of the year. All right. We talk a lot about the state of the economy and also how that translates into what's going on in the housing market. And given the state of the economy, you might anticipate housing prices going down, but actually it's just the opposite. Our friend Wes Jones, a real estate agent in our area, he's been doing it here for a long time. He explained to us why that's happening.
We should be experiencing not necessarily a crash, but we should be seeing a reduction in purchase price. When you have interest rates jump up by, you know, nearly 40% in over a 12-month time span, that should be compressing pricing, but we're actually seeing the opposite. Prices have come up about 5% since the beginning of the year. And overall transaction count is down, just meaning less houses overall are selling, but they're still selling pretty quickly because there's been a lot of pent up demand, you know, over time. So, it's going pretty well, but in general, there are not enough homes on the market to meet demand.
Yeah, so given that demand, if you're thinking about selling your home, it might not be such a bad time, but reach out to Wes Jones and his team at Wes Jones and Associates, sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. He'll do a free kind of overview of the market and assess the current situation for you. You can also start, and I'd recommend starting by simply using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth, because it might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, Oregon is extending a pause on requiring graduates to prove that they are proficient in basic math, writing, and what is it? Math? Reading, writing, arithmetic. Right. Wow, I really screwed that tease up. Let's just get to it in our segment, Unbelievable. Okay, the decline of public education continues. I swear, if I have a child, I am homeschooling them. I don't care how much work it is. So in Oregon, during the pandemic, the governor of Oregon, Kate Brown, had signed a bill that froze some of the proficiency requirements for graduates because standardized tests weren't happening because of the pandemic and school closures. And so when that freeze happened in Oregon, lawmakers decided in Oregon to use it as an opportunity to review graduation requirements. And what they had said at the time is basically that Oregon high school students weren't going to be required to have to prove basic mastery of writing, math, or reading in order to graduate from high school. And now we're learning, according to the Oregonian, that that is going to be extended until 2029. So if you're a high school student in Oregon, until 2029, according to the Oregonian, you are not going to have to prove mastery of reading, writing, or math in order to graduate. And of course, you know, you'd think, well, why is that? We're well out of the pandemic, and that freeze happened because of the pandemic. Well, it is because of the next thing that they blame everything on. If they can't blame it on the pandemic, what do they blame it on? Equity. So they're citing harm to students of color. According to the Oregonian, giving students with low academic skills extra instruction in writing and math, which most high schools did in response to graduation rules, helped them. Opponents of pausing the requirement said. So it says the leaders of the Oregon Department of Education and members of the state school board said requiring all students to pass one of several standardized tests or create an in-depth assignment their teacher judged as meeting state standards was a, quote, harmful hurdle for historically marginalized students, a misuse of state tests, and did not translate to meaningful improvements in students' post-high school success. They went on to say higher rates of students of color, students learning English as a second language, and students with disabilities ended up having to take intensive senior year writing and math classes to prove they deserved a diploma. That denied those students the opportunity to take an elective. Let's just think about that for a second. So you're prioritizing an opportunity to take an elective because you have certain students who are falling behind for various reasons. Maybe it's they're having trouble learning. Maybe it's they're taking English as a second language, and that's understandable. But you're saying that it is more important for them to be able to take an elective than have to take intensive classes to make sure that they can read and write and do basic math, that doesn't make any sense in the world. And when you say that meeting these standards is a harmful hurdle for historically marginalized students, is it more harmful than sending them out into the world without basic reading and writing skills? What did Dory always call it? The soft bigotry of low expectations. And that's truly what it is that they have such low standards for students of color, because remember, they've fostered this victim mentality. No matter what you do, you can't improve your life. And so they're saying, we're going to lower the standards for you so much so that we'd rather send you out into the world without basic reading and writing skills than have you do a little extra work your senior year to make sure that you're graduating on par with other students in your class, to make sure that you're meeting basic standards of reading, writing, and arithmetic. This is crazy, crazy stuff. And I am terrified about what this might mean for our country in 5 years, in 10 years, in 20 years, when we have other global superpowers that are going to be overtaking our population when it comes to the workforce, when it comes to innovation, et cetera, because we lowered standards for such a long time for our students in the name of equity. It's really wild. And to extend this pause till 2029, that's 6 years from now. So students in Oregon, high school seniors in Oregon, for the next 6 years are going to be pushed out without any requirement that they meet these thresholds. And you don't think that that's going to lead to a generation of students in your high schools who are less equipped to take on the real world? And I've said before, you know, I had the superintendent of public instruction on. I don't think standardized tests are the end-all be-all for whether someone will succeed in life. In fact, I don't even think a traditional education is an end-all be-all for whether someone will succeed in life. We talked about it on the show yesterday. I don't think I needed to go to college for 4 years and study journalism to be able to do what I'm doing now. However, it is one sort of thing where you're teaching a kid, this is the requirement, this is what you have to work toward, this is the goal. And being able to achieve a goal, being able to achieve those standards, know that you're on par with other students, there are lessons in that. That is an important thing. And so do I think standardized tests are the indicator of whether you're going to have a successful life? No, but it doesn't hurt either. And teaching kids to that they can graduate, they can get a diploma when they don't have any actual standards that they're trying to work towards, what is going to encourage these kids to give it their best shot? I mean, really, you're taking away these standards. Why would, if you're a kid who has done well academically and really prioritized that and taken pride in that, why would you give it your best shot if now all your classmates aren't going to have to live up to any sort of standard and there's no comparison? And how are they going to, by the way, Nicole, how are they going to decide who a valedictorian is?
Oh, well, some schools got rid of that anyway. Because, you know, highest grade, you can't have a winner.
Yeah. Well, but I suppose they did that based on grades, but then they're like, throw out the grade system. I suppose that's not like how well you did on standardized tests, but only a matter of time before you've already got schools. We talked about this on the show about, we don't need to use a grading system. We should use a point system, and then nobody can actually fail. Mm-hmm. In life, you can fail. As an adult, you can fail.
And you need to learn how to cope with that.
You need to learn that, hey, I've got to push past this. Yep. I don't want to fail in the real world. So we're setting them up to believe that it's okay if you don't meet expectations. It's okay if you don't meet requirements. It's okay if you fail. Everything's fine because of the color of your skin or some other characteristic about themselves they cannot change. And then you thrust them out into the real world and they find out, yes, I can fail. Yes, it matters if I don't meet expectations. Yes, it matters if I have a job and I don't get my work done up to the standard of my employer. You're setting these kids up for a world of hurt. And I mean, truly shame on you. So that's happening in Oregon. Only a matter of time before Washington lawmakers want to do the exact same thing. And it will be unbelievable when it happens.
I agree.
All right. We just had in our friend Dave Taylor with First Mark Insurance yesterday. It was nice to see him. He stopped by the studio for a little chat on the current state of things. And he and I got to talking about, you know, one, who would benefit from this? And I think it's an important part when I talk about the First Mark Challenge is... you really don't have to be some like rich, wealthy person with a bunch of assets to protect with insurance in order to benefit from their service. So here's Dave Taylor, again, the CEO of First Mark.
our client is anybody that values advice and wants to have a partner in their insurance buying decision and in helping them manage those accounts moving forward. So it can be as simple as someone that owns a car and rents an apartment to the uber wealthy that have assets all across the world that we need to insure. So we really, what's most important for us is somebody that values this partnership and wants to have us guide them through it.
Yeah, and I think that's important. I've been talking about the First Trademark Challenge. You know, Mike and I took it in the spring, and what it entails, it does take a little time. You know, I think for us, it took 1 or 2 hours. You meet with First Mark. We did it virtually. We talked about our current insurance, discussed our insurance needs. They went out, they shopped the market, they brought it back to us. And yeah, that's a time investment. But I'll tell you, the time that it saves you on the back end with having a local company dealing with all your insurance needs, reaching out to you proactively every year to see if they can save you money, to see if you're properly insured still, it's going to save you time for years to come. So if you're like, Brandy, I haven't had time to do the First Mark Challenge yet, truly make time. You could save money. You could get better insurance. I really see no downside to it. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. All right, dipping outside Washington State, kind of, because this story has a local tie, but it's happening all the way in Hong Kong. And I saw this headline, and I'm so devastated by it. State Senator Jeff Wilson, he's a Republican state senator in Washington. He represents the Longview area. Well, he got arrested in Hong Kong. And usually I'm kind of like, you know, I'm a very law and order person. So it's like, hey, you need to know the laws. If you're traveling abroad, you need to know the laws everywhere. But this sounds like it was just an honest mistake. This is the headline from the Hong Kong Free Press. I'm sure it's super free. U.S. Republican Senator Jeff Wilson arrested over carrying gun into Hong Kong, barred from leaving the city. So what's wild about this is, and look, sometimes I'm like, how could you forget that you have a gun on you? And look, I mean, I just don't know how you could forget you have a gun on you. I don't know the circumstances of his traveling, but he realizes mid-flight from the U.S. to Hong Kong that he has a revolver in his possession. So when he gets off the plane, he goes to authorities and he says, I didn't realize I had this. Well, they arrested him, even though he's saying it was an honest mistake. He came to them preemptively. And now he's facing, this is punishable by up to 14 years in prison in Hong Kong. 14 years in prison. Now, hopefully, and the senator had put out a statement on his website basically saying he hopes it's resolved quickly, you know, that this is a misunderstanding. So hopefully that bodes well for him that, hey, you know, he proactively came forward, turned the gun in, but he didn't have, it's a licensed gun in the United States, but he didn't have a permission to carry it in Hong Kong or to bring it into Hong Kong, but up to 14 years in prison. Mm-hmm. I'm really hoping that that's not case of let's throw the book at some American politician to make
a
point.
It's not a Russian moment.
I will just say of Senator Wilson, he has always been so kind and supportive of me and of the show. You know, I've got an opportunity to meet him and speak with him several times. So my heart really breaks for him and his family. Can you imagine being in that situation? You know, shouldn't have brought a gun with you. You should have been more careful. But
also,
14 years, that's crazy.
Also, Portland TSA, that's scary.
That they didn't catch it.
They didn't catch it.
Yeah.
And it made it all the way onto a plane.
Well, see, I don't know if, and I'd have to, I don't know if this has been determined. Was it in his carry-on or his check bag? Because in the check bag,
I believe it was in his briefcase. Okay. I think they said that he was reaching for gun in his briefcase. I wouldn't think that you would check a briefcase, but he was reaching for gun, for gum, grabbed his gun and realized what had happened. But he was on the plane, so it had already made it through TSA.
Yeah, well, that is
Oregon.
A little concerning. So I don't know the full details of that. We'd have to kind of look into that.
Because
if it's in his check, there's also some reporting out of Hong Kong where I'm like, I don't know how accurate this is.
You wouldn't have discovered on the flight.
But now it's been picked up by U.S. media. But just wild. And so I'm certainly thinking about the state senator and his family, because it seems like he did what he needed to do, turned himself in, didn't try to hide it from them. Honest mistake, bad mistake, but honest mistake. So we'll follow that up. But I just had to let you guys know about that. That is just a wild, wild story.
Poor guy.
Okay. No, more and more progressives, thankfully, are learning that defunding the police was a stupid idea, and even supporting vocally the idea to defund the police was a really dumb idea. And I mean, we all could have told him that at the time, and we did tell them that at the time. But as I said on the show yesterday, if anyone wants to come around to common sense, you know, I'm more than welcome to have you on the team, by all means. So here's the headline from Fox News talking about Washington, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser. Democratic mayor flips on post-George Floyd police reforms as crime skyrockets in the nation's capital. Womp womp. It says, Bowser said the new legislation proposal aims to address current crime trends, saying some of the changes are just plain common sense. So it's talking about new legislation that she has introduced to try to address some of what's going on. The ACT aims to combat organized retail theft, addresses loitering around open-air drug markets, and makes it unlawful, this is the funny one, unlawful to use masks for committing criminal acts. I'll get to that in a second. It says, quote, under the new law, it will be illegal for any person to organize a theft-for-profit scheme by recruiting or directing other individuals to commit organized retail theft. We're also reinstating the law that makes it unlawful to wear a mask for the purpose of committing criminal acts or threatening people or causing fear. Obviously, our community's relationship around wearing masks has changed significantly since 2020, and thank God for that, she said, referring to thieves in ski masks who frequently rob businesses at gunpoint. So basically, they had, you know, during COVID, they're like, well, we don't know if that person's wearing a ski mask to rob someone at gunpoint or because that's the only mask they had to stop the spread of COVID-19. And so now the mayor is saying, yeah, that's not a thing anymore. You can't do that. So I'm shocked that that was still in place. The mayor said the changes would not apply to people who, quote, are wearing masks for their health. Yeah, I think that if it's a ski mask versus like a, you know, an N95, there's quite a difference there. It's just the dumbest stuff. But, you know, you're starting to see more of these mayors and progressive mayors who are trying to crack down on organized retail theft, which, again, I mean, you're years late on this stuff. You're years late. I've talked about that with Attorney General Bob Ferguson, who's running for governor, about how he launched an organized retail theft task force, which we will undoubtedly brag a lot about on the campaign trail. The issue is, where was Bob Ferguson in 2020 while stores were being looted, you know, under the guise of social justice protests? Did he say anything? Not a peep. As the state's chief law enforcer, not a peep. And that continued in earnest long after 2020. And then all of a sudden he's like, hey, I'm going to launch an organized retail theft task force. Thank you. However, can you at least acknowledge that you really dropped the ball on speaking out about this when it actually mattered? So anyway, good to see people coming around. It's late, but we will welcome them to the party, right? Regardless, thank you, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser, for seeing the light of day a little bit. We'll be watching you closely. All right, we'll talk about Eastside Weight Loss Clinic, my fantastic results on the program. And I love hearing success stories from you guys who have started the program. And please share those with me because I've shared some of them on social media and the show. Ben and Leslie, a married couple, combined, the three of us have lost 101 pounds, and they're not out. They're out running marathons. Something that was funny because when Ben started the program, he sent me a before picture of him, which was him like cooking bacon. And now he sends me pictures of them out, you know, just conquering the world. And he said that they've been lighter on their feet. They have more pep in their step. They went to San Jose, ran the Rock and Roll 5K, 10K. He says it was much more attainable and fun because of the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program. He said it opens up a whole range of new things to enjoy in life and, you know, playing with their dogs and family and friends and stuff. So I'm so happy for them. Please share your Eastside Weight Loss Clinic success stories with me. I'd love to hear them. I started the program this time last year, so maybe you can too. And before the end of the year, you could be down 30 pounds like I was. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Start by scheduling a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team. You can do it virtually. You can do the whole program virtually. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Okay, let's get to our new feature. It is our daily subscriber-only poll. So today's poll had to do with the November election and what is sure to be a very consequential election, certainly for the city of Seattle. There are a lot of other races going on, but this is an off-year election, and that always means that voter turnout is really low. And so the question that I posed to subscribers this morning on Patreon and Locals, the November election is 2 weeks away. During the last off-year election of this kind in 2019, Washington's voter turnout was only 45%. In King County, the turnout was 35%. What do you believe most contributes to low voter turnout? And the options that I gave in that poll were apathy, there being no major races on the ballot, the feeling that your vote won't matter or other. As of right now, the overwhelming majority of people said that they believe that low voter turnout is attributable to the feeling that your vote won't matter, which makes me sad. The only way your vote won't matter is if you don't turn your ballot in. Some of the comments from subscribers. Megan says not knowing about the candidates is one reason. She thinks people don't vote in off-year elections, maybe don't want to take the time for some of these off races to get to know them. Jackie McWalter Huff says poor voter turnout has many factors. I think one of the biggest is decision fatigue. We make so many decisions every day just to get through the day, especially with technology. It brings us so many more options than ever before. We've added so many special elections, so many things on the ballot to get through. It's like there's another slew of decisions, important as they are, and by the time you get through the overload of what you have been processing, you just can't process anything else. Ben Bailey, who I just talked about, said the number of unopposed races is frustrating, primarily judges, which you've discussed in the past. Eljo8916 said apathy, in my opinion, is the biggest reason. So people just really not caring what happens in the world around them. They're just in their safe little cocoon bubble. Eljo went on to say there are several factors that contribute to this. Decades of one-party rule has contributed to polarization in perspectives and political views. We can't agree and we're not informed enough to care about issues, just as long as highly visible issues like abortion, guns, and Trump remain as a dividing line between pragmatic principles and political ideology. I agree with that. Matt Gilbert says definitely apathy. I know my vote doesn't matter being a conservative in Seattle, but I do my civic duty and vote anyway. Good job, Matt. And that's why we just simply love you. Okay, let's get to some questions and comments on other topics. Let me see here. On the trans runner at Seattle Academy and that whole debate, Casey Leonard says, maybe you should start a third category of sports for the gender confused. Let them compete against each other. And I've actually said that this is what really makes the most sense to me, whether it's marathons, you know, you heard about in the Boston Marathon, I think did something similar, or whether it's in prisons, which we've talked about, you know, biological men saying, I'm a woman, and then going and being housed with biological women in a confined cell. I think you just have to have a facility that is for people who identify as transgender. And I think the same can be said for sporting events, you know, at all levels. Like maybe you just need a category where if they choose to compete, then that's the category you're in. And this is also why you really don't see it. I see it occasionally, but you don't see a lot of biological women competing against biological men. And that's because they know they have a severe physical disadvantage. And so I think starting a third category is really the only thing that makes sense. On Ballard and the students that are walking home from school being robbed at gunpoint, which is crazy. Lolly Wilson says, shame on our politicians. I haven't heard Inslee speak about crime because he almost never does. He almost never does unless there's a reason it's politically advantageous. And I will tell you this right now. You're going to hear Inslee. You're going to hear Bob Ferguson talk about crime so much in 2024. They're going to talk about it like they've always talked about it. They're going to talk about it like they have been the savior on crime. They're going to talk about it like they care more about crime than anyone else. And they're going to try to rewrite history. And our job is not to let them. All right, Beth says, Ingram High School students who live in the Crown Hill area are also being mugged and even forced into a car until they give up passwords. That's crazy. I haven't heard about that yet. On the Seattle Police Department finally starting to enforce the new drug possession ordinance, Matthew Cook says, you're always such a smartass, but I love it. We love you for that. You mean some drug addicts commit other crimes? No way.
Go figure.
Color me. Mugshot Espresso says, just look at the guy in the jump seat of the Ryzen aircraft trying to bring an aircraft down on shrooms. We didn't talk about this yesterday, but it was a Everett to...
It was a plane that left Everett. Ryzen plane that left Everett for San Francisco, ended up diverting to Portland. But yeah, the pilot... was an off-duty pilot sitting in the jump seat, and his excuse was he was on shrooms and thought he was dreaming.
And tried to bring the plane down. And isn't he, like, going to be charged with 80 counts of attempted murder or something? That's wild,
it's crazy, but I feel like shrooms are kind of being a little normalized in this, kind of like weed, right?
Like, what do they call it? The microdose.
The microdosing. Yeah. And so I think just with the microdosing, shrooms and, like, all together have been kind of... normalized, because that is also what made that guy shoot his friends at the Gorge.
Oh, it was shrooms.
It was shrooms. And so I'm thinking people are not handling these drugs appropriately. Not that there is a way if it's illegal, but yeah, that's scary, man.
That's terrifying. That's my worst nightmare.
Yeah.
Yeah. Turns out that people who use drugs don't make the best decisions.
Shocking. But yeah, when I worked for the airline for a little bit, and you have to be on your best behavior, especially if you're flying as an employee, if you're flying on the discount or the jump seat or whatever. I mean, you are on your best behavior because you could lose your benefits with anything, with argument, whatever. And so the fact that he took drugs before he got on the plane as a off-duty pilot, shocking.
Yes. Okay, on Andrea Suarez and their effort to get out the vote, Bill Biz with a $20 super chat says, wouldn't it be amazing if the new city council could get behind SPD's efforts related to trying to crack down on illicit drugs? Yeah, it would. I mean, Sarah Nelson, who's one of the only common sense council members, she said that she needs, you know, a majority. There needs to be a majority on the council who are willing to prioritize those things. And so I think getting rid of people like Tammy Morales, Andrew Lewis, who's a flip-flopper on any given day, you really don't know if you can count on his vote or not. I mean, Shama Sawant being off the council by her own choosing is going to be a good thing in that regard. So we'll just have to see how the balance of sanity shakes out on the Seattle City Council after November 7th. In Oregon, them pausing graduation standards until 2029, which to me tells me they're never going to bring it back. Leland Taylor with a $10 super chat. Once you realize that government schools are not focused on academics and that they have become indoctrination camps for the progressive left, then it becomes obvious why Oregon did what it did. Let's see. Dee said, hi, Dee, are you back?
I think Daryl's back. Yeah.
Daryl, Daryl had a death in the family, and so he was back home. Sorry, Daryl, if I'm sharing your personal family information without telling anybody, but he was back home for a while. So I'm glad you're back. I didn't want to bother you. I didn't want to check in. I'm a bad boss. Now I know, my employee's back. But Daryl said, sad, teaching black kids it's okay to be mediocre. Yeah, exactly. Andy Silly says, if there are no academic standards for students to strive for, then what is the function of education? Exactly. What is the barometer for whether they're doing well? A couple more. We had a lot of topics today. On Senator Wilson bringing his gun to Hong Kong, Rick Johnson says, I'm a gun owner. There are no honest mistakes when it comes to guns, just carelessness. When you travel internationally, everything changes, requiring extra vigilance. See also Brittany Griner. And I do agree with you. I mean, I have a little empathy for him because he realized his mistake, turned it in, but I'm not a gun owner, but I tend to also agree with you that it's hard for me to see that mistake happening, especially when you're going on an international trip. Like, how do you not notice there's a gun in your possession? One more. Of course you'd put this one in, Nicole. The dogs have been really shockingly good.
Don't jinx us.
Okay.
Well, still got a couple more minutes.
We're almost to the end of the show. Nick says, when are Nicole's cats coming into the studio? Cats are better than dogs. Sorry. Nicole, we blame Brandy for not having a cat day. Can Brandy allow at least one day a month? I feel cat oppression, LOL.
Trust me, I could not bring my cats in here. If I take them to the Brooks is so big. He's like 20, almost 24 pounds now, I think. But if I take him to the vet, I have to put him in a pillowcase.
Yeah, because he kind of doesn't like to leave home, right?
Because he can't fit in a carrier and can't get him in one. And so I have to put him in a pillowcase and I take him in like an ugly baby. And then the other one in a carrier, like, trust me, you don't want my cats out of the
house. See, it's not me. Nicole doesn't want her cats here. And the dogs are only here because they have to be. Yes. All right. Good stuff today, everyone. And if you want to participate in our subscriber polls, I guess you just got to become a subscriber at UndividedPod.com. UndividedPod.com. I love that. I was telling them, though, I like the subscriber polls because it gets people really active on Patreon and Locals before the show, which I like. So it's like they've got, you know, something they're working on before the show and they're there. And so I've liked it so far. We've been doing it for 2 days. All right. Even 50 Cent says, President Joe Biden is spending way too much time on the beach. Let's get to it. Insanity check. 50 Cent, man, I miss 50 Cent's music. Weren't we just talking about this yesterday? Was I talking about this with my sister?
Do you mean 50 Cent?
No, I mean 50 Cent. I mean, I'm white. I can't, you know. 50 Cent. Okay. If I say 50 Cent, people will say that I'm like culturally appropriating, okay, that I shouldn't talk like that. I don't know. So maybe I was talking with my sister, like 50 Cent, this is totally off topic, but man, he threw out the hits in the early 2000s.
He did.
Oh my gosh. In the club. In the club.
In the club.
In the club. There are so many good ones. And then the movie about him.
I know.
Amazing.
I actually think that we've hit a little hiccup in music right now. There's not a lot of good stuff coming out. Nothing that I see that's going to overlap decades, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Taylor Swift, people seem to like.
But even she's singing her hits from 15 years ago again and calling it new.
What?
Yes.
No, she's got new songs.
They're re-releasing her old songs as new songs.
Okay, all right. Off track. I don't know. Maybe I'm not as hip on Taylor Swift.
Yeah, you're not a Swiftie.
But 50 Cent, rather than creating new bangers of songs, he is commenting on politics. In particular, even 50 Cent acknowledges that given everything that's happening in the world right now, maybe President Joe Biden shouldn't be spending so much time on the beach. So, of course, the president has been criticized for this before. Headline, 50 Cent flames Biden for vacation with the world on the brink. It's from OutKick. And he, you know, he's been on the beach in the summer, but he was also there, you know, dressed for fall, walking with the first lady on the beach. 50 Cent said, "We've got some real shit going on out here, Joe. What's the plan to get a tan? What's the plan to get a tan and chill? Come on now."
He missed some punctuation.
You got to help me out, 50 Cent. Yeah. So, I mean, if even 50 Cent realizes, you know, the president's spending a little too much time on the beach, well, we've got so much insanity out in the world, maybe it's time that the president realizes that as well. All right. That has been your sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Pups, you want to make a cameo? Or are you all fine? Everything's good? Okay. I'm sorry. There was no cameo for the dogs. That's probably a good thing. Mm-hmm. We'll see you tomorrow back on the live show. I'll see some of you tonight up at the historic Everett Theater for the KHDH Freedom Series. Please say hello if you see me before or after the fact. We'd love to catch up and chat. I'll be back on the live show tomorrow. If you've not become a subscriber already, please sign up. Help support our mission and our movement for just $5 a month. UndividedPod.com. UndividedPod.com.